Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I'm Laura Rankhorn.
I'm Kim Crumbly, and together we are Counselor Accent.
I jumped in there and did that with you, and I regret it already.
I regret that you ever jump in and try to do anything with me.
I know. Hey, Kim, I am fangirling today, and I don't know if you're familiar with that term because it's past your generation, but it means, like, I'm so excited because we have a superstar with us today.
That makes me sick that you said fangirling. I wish you had never said that.
I'm so excited.
Yep. I'm excited too, Hans. Hans Apple.
We have Hans Apple with us, and you all may recognize that name because he has written the book award-winning Culture, Building School-Wide Intentionality and Action Through Character, Excellence, and Community. And if that doesn't just speak to the school counselor right there in that title, then I don't know what does. But he also hosts a podcast, which I've been binge listening, and I love it. So, Hans, welcome to the Counselor Accents Podcast.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I feel like you guys need to do this intro for me everywhere I go, because this is like a great way to start my day. This is awesome.
Well, fangirl is ready to be a groupie, it sounds like.
Yes.
So Hans, is it Apple or Apple?
It's Apple. I just spell it weird.
Okay. And Kim, if you had listened to the podcast, you would know.
Listen to me. I want to know if that is the original, like his heritage was Apple, kind of like your Indian heritage has different names, and you call it. I'm asking him if it was an original Apple-ish. And what is that, a German name?
Or it is. Yeah, good job. It is German.
And Apple is a German last name. Laura,
you got
please.
It. Yep.
Okay, go ahead, Hans. Let's you and I talk.
No, I'm excited to be here with you guys. This is awesome.
Well, why don't we start? You were a school counselor. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you started and where you've landed. And let's just talk about you for a little bit.
Yeah. So, I guess first off, you know, whenever I get asked that about my role or what I do, I always feel like I have to start with my why. So I believe that education at its highest level is about inspiring others to discover and develop their joy. And I think for me, it all starts there. I grew up, I was your classic ACEs kid, child of divorce, abusive home, health issues. I always tell people that I could predict what kind of evening it was going to be with my dad based on how the back door slammed. So there was a certain noise, a certain frequency I would listen for, and I knew whether it was going to be a good or bad day with my dad based on how he came through that back door. So at an early age, school became my safe haven, my place I could go, I could be age appropriate, I didn't have to worry about solving complicated adult emotional issues, I could just be a kid. And so I think probably elementary age, I really started to understand things like kindness and empathy and, you know, what it meant to be a leader. And then as I got through high school, I went off and eventually connected with my wife, Jennifer. And she's a fourth generation educator. So I started getting surrounded by, you know, this amazing family that was having almost like teacher conferences all the time. You know, it was like everybody there is an educator. And I sort of got swept up with the idea of maybe this is what I can do to reach people and support and be a difference maker. And so then I got into studying to become a school counselor. And I'm actually still currently a counselor. I've been a middle school counselor for a little over 19 years. I love it. They're crazy, smelly. they're like, you know, little kids and grown up adults all within the same hour. It's just the best. I think it's so much fun. And so I've had the opportunity to do that for a long time, but one of the things that we noticed probably maybe 5-7 years ago, we started getting people that were reaching out to us from other schools and other districts wanting to know why things were so different at our school. They had heard about us. We got some media attention, and And, you know, we had companies that were reaching out going, hey, you know, the products that we send seem to be working differently at your school, Enterprise Middle School, than they do at these other schools. So what are you guys doing different? And so the more questions we got from district leaders and building leaders, the more Jen and I, Jen's the leadership teacher, I was the counselor in that building, it really forced us to kind of look inside and figure out, well, what is the secret sauce? Like, what is so special about what's happening here? Because it's just what we knew. And that's kind of what were the early stages of us creating what we call award-winning culture, which has now become books and podcasts and, you know, professional development that we do with schools and districts around the country.
Yeah, I've looked at your biography and everything that Kim and I follow and, you know, carry around with us, like the ASCD website and everything they put out. You guys, your Enterprise Middle School was awarded the Whole Child Award for the state of Washington. That's huge.
It was a huge accomplishment. Yeah, for sure. We had a lot of people kind of pulling in that direction to bring our school to a special place where we were really able to make kindness normal. Uh-huh. And I think that's what I've tried to do in my book, is really capture kind of a framework for school leaders in how to create this in their own schools and districts.
I have so many questions, and culture is such a hot topic for Kim and me. So I know, Kim, I know your brain is going a million miles an hour too.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking back to what you and I have always, I love that word you said, secret sauce, of what is it? What can we put our finger on? And Laura and I have spoken about climate and culture. And, you know, tell me what you think about one of the things that we have discovered. And if we're on the right track, leadership, the leadership of the school is so vital, because how that leader goes, so goes the school. And we have seen administrators who allow laughter in the school and allow students movement and freedom and discovery. And then we've seen administrators who really were the type of administrator that we had growing up, especially me, had growing up, where if you keep the books in order in the physical year, it comes out on top, and your teachers and students behave, then I've created, you know, the school that I want. So mm-hmm. Do you think that we're on the right track when we say the administrators have so much to do with the climate and culture of a school? And how do you, and then what do you do with it if your administrator's not on board?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. What I would say is I agree with you that leadership is huge. Here's the pushback I would give you is everybody in your school is a leader, including you as a school counselor. And honestly, it is time for school counselors to realize that you are a leader. I went to a professional development training by a guy named James Hunter, wrote an amazing book called The Servant and a follow-up book called The Culture. Works with Fortune 500 companies, military. I mean, just like, he's a big deal, right? And he was speaking to probably, I don't know, maybe 3,000 educators. And in that room, he said, raise your hand if you're a leader. And Kim, there was probably only 100 people that were willing to raise their hand. And you know who they were? They were principals. Oh, that's who they were.
Yeah.
And that is so wrong. Like, we need to start realizing that leadership is influence. And whether you're, you know, a custodian, whether you're the lunch lady, whether you're the librarian, whether you're the counselor, whether you're a teacher, you have influence. And I think what I've tried to do in my book is also articulate the other part of that, which is student leadership. So I totally agree that how leadership goes really dictates how the culture goes. But if you don't have the leader in your building that you need or want or deserve, then you need to find ways to lead up and lead out and lead down and inspire the people that are within your circle. Because I totally agree. I think, man, when you get a building leader, it feels easier, right? It feels like you can run, like, okay, now we're going to do this. But I think the same thing is one of the suggestions I have with in my book about implementing, say, an SEL or character education is you've got to find a team of people. You've got to put a group together that's going to be the champion for this. It cannot just be Kim. It cannot just be Laura. It's got to be who's in this together. And it may not be my building principal. It may be this parent group. It may be these student leaders. It may be that teacher down the hall that really gets it. Am I speaking your language?
You are speaking our language.
Yes.
Laura and I continually tell school counselors, and we have been so surprised at the ones who don't feel, or how can we be a leader? And not really realizing that we are a leader because they don't feel like their administrator is looking on them as a leader. And that can be very frustrating. But we were like, you know, it is literally in our, it's in our manual. You are a leader. So it says it right here in print. I don't know, Laura, my mind was going to different people that we've talked to, and I'm excited about having these resources because I think that's going to be stuff that you and I can read and look at. But we do feel the frustration of school counselors when you're in a culture that's kind of like a lobster that's been boiled in a, doesn't realize it's being boiled. You know what I'm saying? Because it's happening and you really don't realize it. And we see a lot of schools that are in, there are, that school counselor may realize it, but nobody else realizes we're in this culture that needs to change, but because they've been in it so long. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. When you were talking, it kind of made me think back about our early journey when we started trying to get more proactive, right? For a long time, I felt like we were a reactive school, right? Just putting out fires around the school. I always tell people we had this one spring where we had kind of this violent assault in a classroom where, you know, one student went after another student. It was a really ugly situation. And, you know, basically counselors and principals got called in to sort of deal with the aftermath of this assault. And it was traumatic. And there was, you know, teacher was traumatized. Students in the class were traumatized. One student was expelled, right? I mean, there was just all this fallout. And I spent probably that last, you know, I would say month and a half in meetings and, you know, trying to assure people that the school was going to be safe. And the reality is it was not safe, guys. And a couple things that I realized during that really hard time is, number one, the two students that got into this altercation, they weren't like enemies. Like, this wasn't like, okay, we finally had enough and now the one kid snapped. They were best friends, but the one student had no ability to regulate, you know, emotion at all. The other thing is, you know, you might think as I'm kind of talking that this is a brand new teacher. You know, this is somebody that doesn't have good classroom management, things like that. This was a veteran teacher that had good relationships with kids. Like, I realized this could literally have happened in anyone's room in our building, right? The third thing is, as much guilt and shame and just, you know, frustration that I felt about I hadn't done enough with this student and I wasn't able to serve this student in the way that they needed to be served, I realized that spring that I cannot do this work alone. Like, it's not all on me as the school counselor to make sure our entire school community's mental health is what it needs to be. Like, this is a team effort. Like, we've got to get parents on board. We've got to get, you know, teachers and staff on board. We've got to get students on board. And I think the other piece that we haven't really addressed yet, you've got to go get the community on board. And, you know, it certainly took us a while. We eventually got to where, let's bring in a curriculum, let's implement this curriculum in a, you know, meaningful way. And slowly we moved from that reactive to the proactive. And I think the 2.0 version of that, which I really articulate in the book, is how do we now get intentional? You know, okay, let's we're doing some stuff, but now how do we take that to another level?
Wow. You have like explained all of this so well. You're hitting the heart of what Kim and I talk about so frequently. And yeah, you're one of us. So welcome to your new family.
Yay.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, and I feel like you set that up just perfectly, but when we think about counselors, what are a few keys to a counselor leading the implementation of a school-wide SEL or character education program? Sometimes it can feel like we are on an island, and when you think about, and you've talked about this already, but when you think about spearheading a campaign like this, it can seem overwhelming. So talk to that counselor that's hearing us and thinking, I want to do this. Where do we start?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does start with creating a team. I think it starts by putting it out there, putting your vision out there for what you hope, and finding your people, finding your family, like you kind of referenced, because they're there. And I think sometimes we don't know who they are. And that's because we haven't been willing to speak what we believe about education and what we believe about, what we hope for kids. But they are there, and we got to find them, and we got to put a team together. I think a huge part that I would suggest is you cannot do SEL and character ed in isolation. Like, this cannot just be a thing that happens on Fridays in this one class or at this one time a day, and then we put it on a shelf and forget about it for the rest of the week. That is like, you know, that's the biggest mistake I would say people are making. They think, okay, we have a curriculum or we have a thing that we do for that, so we're good. I think the thing that helped us turn that corner was when we started infusing that everywhere. So we started, you know, how do you put SEL into the school assemblies? How does character education come out in your morning announcements? How does all of these ideas get rolled back into parent-teacher conferences? How does our hiring practices look for finding, you know, the right people that are going to share this vision? I mean, literally everything in our school. I'll give you a crazy example that you've probably never thought of before, but we do book studies like a lot of schools, and we'll find a book and a bunch of teachers will come together and work on the book. We include students on the book studies. Like, they need to be a part of everything that we're doing. If you have a PBIS team or a leadership team, you need to be having students on there. You know, like, if you're hiring on your staff, you're bringing in new folks, there needs to be students on there. Like, we have to find ways to, you know, empower all of the stakeholders in the school. And I think that's one big thing. I think finding ways to really make character and SEL a part of all the work we do, not just the standalone. One more thing I'll say, there's probably a lot I could say, but I'll leave you with one more thought on that. I think counselors, and I'll just push it forward, all educators need to model this work. And I feel like we say that a lot. We say, you know, we need to put it out there. We need to model what we expect. But I'll give you an example of what I mean. And this really hit home. We'll see if it hits home for you guys. When you write a book, one of the things you get to do is you get to go out and do a bunch of interviews. There's, you know, people that want to talk to you about your book and stuff. And I did a podcast a few months back. I won't say what the podcast was, but it was all focused on social emotional learning. And the lady had read my book and she was really excited. And she had put together all these really intentional questions. But she was relatively new to the podcast space. And you guys know, because you have a podcast, there's some hurdles. Like, it's not easy to, like, you know, create this platform, you know, especially if technology is not always your best friend. And that's kind of how this person was. So the morning of the podcast recording, literally every tech issue that could happen happened, right? The Wi-Fi crashed. Like, she hadn't had the new update that she needed to record. We had to go back in and restart the computer. Like, there was multiple things. It was a comedy of errors, right? Nothing's working. And we finally get started, and we're about to jump in. And she goes, Hans, and she holds up her finger. She goes, can you give me just 1 minute? And I was like, yeah. And I had no idea. Like, okay, now what? Is there another tech problem? So she shuts her eyes and she literally, Laura Kim, she does like deep breathing for 2 minutes before we start this podcast. And you guys know how Zoom is. You're just staring back into the camera. It's a little awkward, right? Like, it's like, okay. And I'm just watching her breathe for like 2 full minutes. And at the end, she gets done and she does this little like sort of positive self-mantra type thing. She pops her eyes open and she's like, all right, are you ready to record? And I'm like, okay, yeah. And so we jump in and start talking and stuff. And afterwards I said, you know, what you did before we started that podcast was like one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like you modeled social emotional learning live in the moment. Like you were completely vulnerable. You needed to get recentered so you could do your best interview. I was like, that's what needs to be happening in schools. So for me, it was like, I don't know if it's registering for you guys, but for me, it was such an epiphany that it's like, yeah, like we as counselors, as principals, as teachers, like we need to be able to model this stuff. So what does it actually look like to live it and show kids?
Gosh, you are so right. And as you're telling that story, Kim, you're probably doing the same thing I am. I'm thinking back to times that we've had those moments. And I wish I'd thought of that.
I did think of it, and I was doing that. You didn't know. I was literally deep breathing, and
What you were doing.
I thought I was frozen.
Okay.
I was frozen, and I thought it was that Botox that you had that looked made you look frozen, but actually we were. So, Hans, we were doing that before this other person.
Yeah.
You're doing such a great job of I hope you're having this. My brain is just going crazy here, Laura. And I'm thinking about how well you have said, and I don't need to re-say it, but it's infused into every part of the school. And we do see a trend toward this. I mean, we do see a trend, and I think it's a good trend, that it's not just the responsibility of the school counselor, that this has become such a huge issue in our schools. It's got to be infused in every part of the school. I think that is mind-blowing for so many to think about in everything involving students. I feel like you're past cutting edge. I think you're pulling us even further into this, and I think that's a great thing. You're pushing us further, and I love that.
I do too, and I'm reading a book right now about like culture. The chapter I'm on is about culture in general, just like family culture and everything. And something that I read last night, I actually read it out loud to my husband, but it talked about how whatever your family culture is, and if we can transfer this to the school, I'm just going to throw this statement out there, but they said, if you like get in the car and drive to a place like school or church, and the conversations you have in the car are different from the way that you act when you get out of the car, then you don't have a culture, you have a performance. And so it's the same thing with where we are in a school. If you talk these things, but you're not modeling them, then you are putting on a performance. And I think you drove that home with that example. That is so powerful.
No, I think that's a great point. And, you know, when the pandemic hit, that's a lot of the questions we were getting asked was, you know, what are you doing? How are you like, you know, keep the culture going, all those kind of things. Uh-huh. And I think what we found is if you've put these pillars in the ground, and really, you know, laid that foundation, then it just filters into home. So it's been fun to see language that we create at school show up at the grocery store and at church and, you know, at the local sporting event, you know, whatever it is, like, it just sort of seeps in and you know, it just becomes a part of the entire community, that's what's exciting, right? That's when you know you're really creating change.
And Hans, I think something that you said that I don't want to, I want us to unpack it or re-say it or look at it again, because I think this is so powerful for school counselors and especially for new school counselors. It's got to be more than just those lessons.
Yeah.
That we feel like that's a checkoff. And we talk to new counselors all the time, and they feel like if they get those lessons in, it's a checkoff.
Right.
But that's just a checkoff. It's not, we've got to get to the heart of the issue and in everything and in every way. And is it the vision or the mission of our school? And you're right, I think, as counselors in that respect, we can really step up, even if possibly we have administrators who don't follow that. They can see this is our wheelhouse if they're not on board, and we can push for that change. But I love that. It's got to be more than just those lessons that we do as a checkoff to make that culture change and climate change in our schools.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, I know there's counselors out there that struggle with that. There's counselors that think, oh, but that's my domain. That's my area. But I think, you know, if you look inside in your heart, you know that this work is bigger than just you. Like, it's that important, like serving the whole child. And, you know, when we think about, gosh, if we only, you know, focus on academics, we're only giving students 30 to 50% of what they need to be successful after high school. That's what research tells us. Like, if they pass every test, if they learn all the standards and all they ever do is the academics, we are failing kids. Like, that's so just like, if that doesn't resonate, I don't know what does. I mean, you can't expect to give students, you know, 50 to 70% of what they need to be successful after high school all on your own, right? I mean, considering all of the teachers that come before you and after you that, you know, are spending the time on those academics, it has to be a group process.
Hans, do you have some acronyms that you use to drive your point home and help communicate your platform? Do you want to talk to us about some of your acronyms that you use?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, in our school, we basically have come up with three, what we call house rules. So falls under character, excellence, and community. Character being, you know, will you do the right thing? Excellence being, will you do your very best? And community being, what will you do for others today? So those three things sort of drive everything else that we do. And those end up kind of breaking out. So character, when we talk about that, we're talking about curriculum, we're talking about highlights, we're talking about activity, we're talking about rewards and reinforcers, we're talking about accountability, a common language, training, the experiential part of, you know, infusing character, and then the reminders. And so there's all these little elements to actually create, you know, that space. When we talk about excellence, I really, in the book, lay out the four E's of excellence, which are engagement, empowerment, experiential, and epic. And then when we think big picture, community-wise, it's all about how do we shape our community. So we're talking in terms of the social media, our house rules, authentic branding, personal outreach, and experience. So there's all these little elements that we kind of break down in the book. And we actually have posters on our website too, so you can get those as well for free.
Are you blown away, Cam?
I want Hans to come to my school you do go to schools, don't you?
I do. Yep.
You go to schools. Yep. I just feel like he's got such a fresh take and such, I don't know, there's so much there. And I'm so glad that when our listeners are through with the podcast, you have some
resources. You
have stuff for us, Hans, that we can look at. So.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So my book came out in May, right? And I mentioned my wife, Jennifer. She's doing a sequel to this book, and it's specific to the teacher. So how do you take this school-wide framework and infuse that within the classroom, right? So that's kind of the follow-up piece.
That is great.
I'll let you know of a little secret that I don't think I've shared with anybody else.
Ooh,
there's a third book. There's a third book coming. Yeah, this is breaking news. So there's a third book coming. We're writing it together, my wife and I, and it's going to be focused on the community. And so how do you bridge that gap between school and home? So, you know, it's really going to be designed for, you know, parents and business leaders and community to really become a part of serving the whole child.
I'm excited about that. That is great.
Sounds like a lot of that. You're just not leaving the folks who are learning with you on this.
Right.
You are creating more to dig in deeper and go deeper with this. I'm telling you, never before has this been more needed than it is now. And what we're, the increased number of issues that teachers are dealing with. And we do see that it is more than a school counselor can handle. And I hope that school counselors are as welcoming of all the other helps that we get as Laura and I are. But we're excited about all these resources for sure.
You know what's funny too, that you say that, like counselors have known for years that this work matters, right? Like I'm preaching to the choir right now. You guys know how critical this is. But a lot of folks, I feel like around the country, are just now realizing because of the pandemic, oh, we need to do more. We need to like, you know, infuse social emotional learning, or we need to reach that whole child. Like, I feel like this is a new idea that's not really a new idea. Do you know what I mean by that?
Right. Yeah, that's true. I have two things I'd like to say. Number one is your wife's voice is like the most soothing voice I think I've ever heard in my life. If I got a book, like a list of books together and sent them to her, do you think she would record them so that I could listen to her read them?
I bet she would.
Her voice is, it's just so soothing.
We love accents and voices. That's kind of our thing, you know,
awesome.
And we don't have accents, but everybody else does. And I'm when I saw your name was Hans, I was really, and this may sound, you know, that I'm pigeonholing people, but I really was hoping I'd get a German accent.
I'm sorry. I let you down today. It's really disappointing for you.
Just, yeah. But anyway.
No, it's funny. You guys mentioned my wife. She actually went to school to be a second grade teacher. So she never thought she was going to end up in middle school, which is where she is now. She has a huge passion for storytelling and has written a couple children's books. So it doesn't surprise me to hear you say that her voice is pretty fun to listen to. I think that is a superpower that she has for sure.
Yes.
These are award winning. I saw these are like Mom's Choice. I mean, mm-hmm. These are some, so you guys have got it going on.
They do.
That's so exciting.
And I told Kim that when I was listening to your podcast and how the intro, I'm guessing that's your wife's beautiful voice coming on and saying, you're listening to the award-winning culture podcast. Every time I'm like, they've won awards. And I regret not naming ours award-winning something because it grabbed my attention. And I was like, oh, wow. So, yeah, good job.
But they really are award-winning.
They really are. We just say that. We just tell people that. But they really are. The second thing, I was writing notes as you were talking because so many things that you said just stood out and you put it so simply and I just love that. But I wanted to go back to something you said when you do a book study, you invite some of the students to join you. What is an example of a book that you do that you invite students to join you on?
It could be anything. I'll tell you one that middle school kids particularly love is The Positive Dog by John Gordon. You're going to think this is weird probably, but we've done book studies with Elizabeth Bostwick's Leap Effect. We've done book studies with Culturize by Jimmy Casas.
Love that.
We've done book studies with parts of Innovator's Mindset. I mean, it really is anything
that
you have going on that you're like, okay, this is where our school needs to go, this direction. Award-winning culture, right? I mean, it could be any book.
Yes.
But the idea of, okay, let's not just sit around and have these conversations in isolation because who are we really talking about? We're talking about the kids. So let's invite them to the table. Let's have them share their feelings and thoughts and hopes and dreams of what, you know, classes could look like. So that's been super, super powerful.
I just threw my pen, Kim, and you know what that means. I am blown away.
I know that. I know what that means. So I'm with you. I agree.
I think inviting the students, you said it earlier, but you're empowering them. And I'm just thinking about the future, like the leaders that you are molding to show them they don't have to wait to advocate for themselves. you know, I just, this is huge and it's revolutionary and I wish it weren't. I wish that this had been common practice forever, but I think this is going to be huge for our listeners and for your readers. This is huge.
No, it's so important to empower kids. Yeah. Like, and I think we undersell kids. I'll give you one last example, that I do write about in the book. And so you can read more about it, but we, for the last few years have done something that we call as a student-led leadership podcast. And it's really been an amazing journey. You can actually listen to some of the episodes on our website, but kids get to interview, you know, professional athletes and speakers and authors and other educators from all over the world and share those interviews that they do. It's not adult driven, it's students. And then at the end of those do reflections. We call it a debrief where they get to like share, you know, how did they connect to whatever, you know, the topic was or what they learned or whatnot. And we've really dove in on like serious things like, you know, let's take apart anxiety. Let's take apart innovation. Let's look at leadership. Let's look at self-harm. I mean, it's real topics that these kids are like talking to experts about. And then, you know, what do they learn? How do they feel? What do they think about things? You know, how are they going to do things differently in their life? And to be able to share that with our community, obviously, but even beyond, has been life-changing. And so that would be another example of, there were a lot of people that told me that I was crazy and that my wife was crazy, that kids could never do a podcast. They would never be able to, you know, pull this off. We heard lots of no's before we got to yes. And it's been absolutely like a game changer for our school. Wow. So I write about that in the book and you can definitely learn more about it. But, you know, I just think there's so many ways that are outside the box thinking to empower kids. This has to be something that we do.
I think you do a lot of out of the box thinking, Hans, and a lot of different, and I think that is so needed and so great. And I think it's a fresh word for, and it, you know, it, you feel like you hear the same things a lot of times over and over again, but I do think that your take on things is fresh and it's forward moving. And I think our listeners are going to want to delve more into what you have to say. And so we will definitely link that so that will make that easier for our listeners. Any final words, Laura, before any final questions?
Yes, I would like for you to talk about your award-winning Culture Academy. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, we just actually launched that. So thanks for asking about that. This is basically like an online school where you can go and educators can take classes and learn little bits. Like, obviously, we come out when we go into a school or a district, we have up to 2-day trainings that we do. So, you know, that's more of a comprehensive thing. But we do a little intro into things like, you know, social emotional learning and infusing that into project-based learning. You know, how do you start to create an award-winning culture? Just sort of those baseline, you know, key concepts. And so we have an academy that we created. It's the Award-Winning Culture Academy, and it's available through our website. And so that's been super, really fun to launch, super cool. And, you know, I think we're able to reach folks right now, kind of in this crazy COVID world, where we can't travel as much as we're used to.
That sounds so exciting and such a great opportunity for schools and individuals who want to take their school in that direction. So check that out. And then also people can connect with you on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, and we'll put your email in our show notes, and all of your contact information, links to your books will be in our show notes. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners before we go?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, this has been a really hard, I would say, year, right? Like, we all know that. And I think one of the things that's got me through this year is seeing the optimism, seeing this as a time to pivot, to reimagine schools, reimagine our roles as counselors. And I just really want to encourage people to not lose this opportunity. Like, I feel like everything in education right now is on the table. Like, there's this opportunity as we kind of hopefully slowly start to come out of this. You know, what do we all want school to look like? And, you know, let's use that influence that we have in this mental health space to reimagine what school can be for kids.
Powerful. So glad that you said that. We have been encouraging counselors to take this time as go for it. We're giving each other more grace than we ever had, but to make mistakes and to try something new. And this is we know that anytime adversity comes, the change. And we hope that we are changing for the better. You're offering these resources to help us be better. And we say, if you're going through adversity, Laura and I always say, get everything you can out of it. Whatever we need to learn, let's learn it and make changes for the better. So that was a perfect, perfect ending to what you've said today. I love that.